I thought I lived a very normal childhood until I grew up. And then I discovered that nobody who was born and bred in the city of Chicago had a normal childhood. I didn't know what a small town was until I was in high school. Having lived in Chicago, when I was in high school, my folks moved to Florida. I caught up with them. And seriously, our family moved to Florida while I was in high school. And I would say that I lived a fairly normal high school life. I got in a normal amount of trouble, kicked out of a normal amount of classes, cut the normal amount of classes, skipped school the normal amount of time, if there is a norm on that. I didn't get in enough trouble to be the king of that gang, yet I didn't stay out of enough trouble to be the king of that gang. And in high school, I was always one of the persons on the outside of a circle, sort of peering in. But I was always on the fringes of it. Close enough where I wish I could be part of the circle, wasn't totally rejected, and yet not really part of that inner core that exists in high school age. My objectives were to become an engineer. I think that when I was in high school, every boy had his objectives to become an engineer. That's why we've got so many engineers today. And I was very interested in math and in science, extremely interested. And so when there came a series of demonstrations to our high school called Sermons from Science, I was very eager to attend. And I don't know if any of you have seen the series of lectures put on by Dr. George Speak, but they're both entertaining and instructional. How many of you have seen? Any of you? Yes. One, two, three. Yes. He has been. He has put them on many different places. Since I've come to Christ, I have never had the opportunity to be in the same city again. I've been there the week later or the week earlier, a time or two. And during that week, God spoke to my heart. Dr. Speak was used a lot of very elaborate scientific paraphernalia to communicate different truth. And I can remember the night that I came to Christ, he spoke every night, that he was standing up on the stage and he had something that looked like a series of tubes, one longer than the next, in a spiral. And he was pointing it at people as they came in, like a machine gun. And he pointed it at me as I came in, and I had a few very smart remarks, which I don't think would be appropriate to repeat at this time. And later on, during his message, he pointed out that what he was doing was he was recording what people were saying. And what he had was a long-distance microphone, and he held up a tape recording. And he said, "I've recorded everything that, you know, or many things as you were walking in." And I thought to myself, if he plays that tape, he'll go to jail. You can't play what I said publicly. And I was very embarrassed. And later, he took that tape, and he had a large magnetic field, and he passed that tape by a magnetic field, and you know what happens. It totally erases, and he used that to illustrate what the blood of Jesus Christ does to sin. And all during the week, he had been standing upon, or he had been using a dial that he hung from his belt that looked like a telephone dial. And it was a one-man show. He had totally set up everything, and he would sit there, and he would dial certain things. And he might dial one number, and a screen would come down. And he would dial another number, and the house lights would dim, and a third number, and a projector in the back of the room would start. And then he'd dial a different number, and the lights would come on, and the screen would go up, and the projector would... And he just had all of this. And so he could control everything with this little dial that hung from his belt. And what he would do is every now and then he would start the screen coming down and he would dial supposedly a wrong number by mistake. And he would dial a number that would energize a Tesla coil. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever seen a Tesla coil, but he had one that stood about 3.5, 4 feet tall. And when he would energize that thing, it would give a retort not unlike a 45 caliber gun and send a spark about 3 feet long. And when you were just expecting the projector to go on, it would help you become a little bit more alert. And all week long, he said, on Friday night, I'm going to stand upon that Tesla coil and allow enough electricity to pass through my body to cause a piece of wood that I hold in my hand to go on fire. Well, I wasn't about ready to miss that. And sure enough, he did it. Now, it doesn't break out in great flames like it had been soaking gasoline, but it smolders and smokes. And it would continue on into a fire. It's a very persuasive and interesting demonstration. It's a very dangerous one, by the way. Were he to forget and leave a key in his pocket, the key would generate so much electricity it would burn a hole in his leg. And any metal in contact with his body would be disastrous. And it's very painful as well. But he explained that what happened, in layman's terms, was that the electricity is present, but it doesn't affect him. It is out of phase, so to speak, with his body. And he uses to illustrate the fact that God is present in the world, but that God is out of phase with some people, or those people are out of phase with God, and God doesn't affect their lives. Well, I had gone to church all of my life. I'd been to Sunday school. At the proper age, I took the courses and was received into the church. I stood in front of the congregation and recited the creed that I was told to recite, and I believed every word of it. Matter of fact, before I said those creeds, I was very concerned that I was going to go to hell and that I wasn't really a Christian. And I thought, boy, this is the thing that has really made it. Boy, I've really joined the church. But when he talked about God affecting your life, he was talking about something I had never even heard of. God affecting a life. That was totally a foreign concept to me. God affecting a life. You know, you go to church and you pray to God. You talk about God. You confess a little bit. You have a creed, but affecting your life. He further used an illustration. He said, my name is George Speak. If another man were to talk like a speak, walk like a speak like a speak, do everything like a speak does, and even if he were to call himself a speak, that wouldn't make him a speak. And I thought, that makes sense. To be a speak, you have to be born into the speak family. And I thought, well, yeah, that's really brilliant. And he said, likewise, to really be a Christian, you have to be born into God's family. And I thought to myself, what in the world is he talking about? And he proceeded to show from the scriptures God's judgment. And God convicted my heart that night. I don't recall anything that he said. I don't recall any verse that he mentioned. But I recall sitting there, realizing that if I were to die, I would go straight to hell. That God had every reason in the world to send me to hell. I was doing things that I knew not to do. I was working as like most high schoolers, or many high school boys do, in a grocery store, as a sacking groceries and in the stock room. And whenever I got hungry, I did like everybody else in our store did. You went to the shelf and you found whatever you like, you broke it open and ate as much as you want and threw the rest in the corner to be swept up later. And it was pilfering was just a way of life. And I realized that God was convicting me and that God was in righteousness saying, Russ, you deserve to be damned. And Dr. Speak stood up there. And when he got this thing going, he turned around to me, and to the whole audience, I thought it was to me, and he said, but Christ died for us. And it was like somebody pulled the chain on a light bulb. If you were to ask me before, Russ, do you believe that Christ died for us? I would have said, of course. I was taught to believe that in my church. That was part of our creed. Christ died for us, right? But I never knew what it meant. I deserved hell. Christ died in my place. He died for me. And that just, it overwhelmed me. And Dr. Speak said, now how many of the people in this audience would like to have his death, Christ's death, count for them so that they don't have to pay the penalty themselves? And as I sat there in my seat, I thought he was asking a rhetorical question. You see, I thought it was so obvious that the answer was yes, I would, of course. I can go by myself and go to hell. I can receive what God has done for me and go to heaven. I mean, what an obvious decision. And as he said that, I thought everybody was going to raise their hand. And so I shot my hand up. And although there were other people with their hands raised, they weren't sitting close enough to me for me to see them. And so I started pulling my hand down. And I got it down to about here. And I asked myself a question. Russ, when are you going to make up your own mind and do things that you think you ought to do instead of what other people think? And I raised it up all the straighter. Dr. Speak asked that those of us who did want to make this decision to step out and to go into the back. I went backward. I didn't go forward. And so we went out the back door, and he came over in the other room, and he talked to us. And I don't remember much of what he said. I don't remember any verse that he shared specifically. But I do remember praying and telling God, okay, God, you can have all my sins. I'm ready to give them up. And I want Christ to live in my life. Well, I was on cloud nine. I was elated. The friends that I came with obviously didn't want to stick around and wait for me, so they just drove on and I had to walk the 3 miles back home. But I didn't mind it a bit. I thought, you know, it was the first time I could walk and I looked up and the stars were bright and I communed with God on the way home. And immediately when I came to Jesus Christ, I had two desires. The first desire was to tell other people about it, and the second one was to read the Bible. Now, I don't know if they told me to do that or not. If they did, I don't recall that. I just wanted to do it. And so I got home, and I want to tell my folks. And so I went in, and they were watching television. And I thought, well, they'll ask me, what you've been doing tonight? And I'll tell them. And I came in, and they said, oh, you're home. And so I didn't know how to get started. So I waited until the television went on, you know, until they started playing the Star Spangled Banner. And they said, well, good night. And I was very disappointed. I thought, well, maybe tomorrow morning. They'll say, how did things go last night? And I got up the next morning with great anticipation. They didn't ask me. I didn't know how to get started. I didn't know what to say. My other desire, start reading the Bible. Well, you see, I didn't know anything about the Bible in those days. Boy, I knew that Genesis was at the beginning and that in the New Testament, I knew there was an Old Testament and a New Testament. Genesis was at the beginning of the Old Testament and Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were at the beginning of the New Testament. That was probably 90% of the sum of my biblical knowledge. And so I picked up my New Testament. I started reading it. Book of Matthew, the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Judas and his brethren. Judas. I thought he betrayed Jesus. And Judas begat Phares and Mar. And that went on like this, and boy, I fought with it. And I got all the way through the book of Matthew, if you can believe that. So I finished up the book of Matthew, all 28 chapters. That took me almost a month. Then I turned, Book of Mark, the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And I thought, this is the same as Matthew. I guess I've read it all, and I closed my Bible, and I didn't read it for 2 years. I went to church. I had a new zeal in church. But you know what perplexed me? You see, I didn't know there were two kinds of churches. You know what perplexed me? Why didn't they make it plain? I used to go every Sunday morning and sit there and listen. And I thought, well, it's sort of in there. What happened to me, the idea of coming to Jesus, yeah, it's sort of in there, but it's not plain to anybody. Nobody can understand it. And I'd look around and I think, they're in there the way I was before that Jesus came into my life. And I was very perplexed. I didn't know there were other churches that did make it plain. That, you know, I'd never been in one, so I didn't know that they existed. Well, after I got out of high school, the Korean War had just ended. And I thought to myself, you know, this country is stupid enough to start another one of those wars not too long from now. I think I'll get into the army now and get out before they start another one. And that way, when they start drafting everybody, they'll get everybody but me. And so all my friends are going off to college, and my buddy and I, we joined the army. And I took my basic training down at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and then I went to school up at Fort Belvoir. And I would just try to, every now and then, try to reform a little bit. And my life didn't reflect much of Jesus Christ. Matter of fact, I was in a school outfit. There were 9 of us in this school, and I went to chapel one Sunday. I went to chapel more than one Sunday, but one particular Sunday I went to chapel. And the pastor and the chaplain there spoke. And he spoke about telling other people about Jesus Christ, about witnessing. And as he spoke, all of the fires and the zeal to tell other people in my, just welled within me. And I was, boy, I want to go back and I want to do it. And then inside the bulletin, lo and behold, he said, there's a piece of paper in the bulletin. It was a legal size sheet. It was all folded up. And he said, take that out. And I took it on out. And he said, this sheet was meant to help you. And he said, at the top of the sheet, there are some questions that you can ask the guys in the barracks to get you started in a conversation. And at the bottom of the sheet is what you can tell them about Jesus Christ. And I looked down at that, and I read that, and I thought, this is what I've needed. All these months, boy, this is it. And I went on back to the barracks. I was higher than a kite. And I put it down on my bunk. And I read the first question. There was nobody else in the barracks except one friend of mine, Alfred Alfonso Zuger, from Tacoma, Washington. And I read that first question and I went over. I said, hey, Al, let me ask you a question. He said, what? And I asked him. And it was like a plane into the side of the mountain. I said, wait a minute. And I went back and I got this question number 2. And I asked that. And I had a repeat performance. Question 3, the same. Finally, I went and I got the piece of paper and I came back and I said, hey, I'll read this. And I'll never forget. He took that piece of paper and about like this, he looked down it, crumpled it up, dropped it in a butt can and said, come on, Russ. You live the same way the rest of us do. And I want, my heart cried out, but Al, I'm different inside. But I knew that I couldn't say that because what he said was true. I was living the same way they were. My language didn't reflect anything different than their language. My life didn't really reflect anything different. No, I wasn't doing some of the things they were doing. But I wasn't reflecting Jesus Christ either. I got stationed after a year in the service in Kaiserslautern, Germany. And there I played some intramural football and God was gracious enough to break my right leg. And I had seen some posters around the barracks that talked about a serviceman's rally on Saturday night over at the chapel. And it used to say, 90 minutes for God on the devil's night. Not good theology, but nonetheless, that was their motto, you know. And And so I thought, boy, that sounds sort of interesting. And so after I'd broken my leg one Saturday night, I thought, man, I'll go over there. And I went to the movie. And it was a terrible thing. I knew I should have gone. But I went to this movie anyhow. And I really got mad at myself. Because once I got into the movie, I realized that I had already seen the movie. And I didn't like it the first time I saw it. And so I made a resolve. Next Saturday night, I'm going to that meeting. And I did. And two things really caught me. Two things just grabbed me by that group of guys that met there that night. Number one was the way they sang. I'd never heard people sing the way they sang. They sang with gusto. They got up there and they were all singing loud and clear, and they were having a good time. And the second thing that grabbed me was they started giving testimonies. And the guy would say, who would like to give a testimony tonight? A testimony? I didn't know what a testimony was. You know, I only thought that happened in courtroom. And people were standing up and telling about answered prayer. And they were talking about the relevance. And boy, I immediately saw that here were people where God was affecting their lives. And I was just drawn to this bunch. Well, I started hanging around with these guys. And the guy in the next barracks over by the name of Ron Huber, he started coming on over and seeing me and started talking to me and started helping me. Started showing me how to do some Bible study. I was very happy to do Bible study. Matter of fact, I was eager to do Bible study. Man, I was, you know, just going like town on Bible study. But I watched those guys, and they used to count little cards, like navigators do. And little verse memorization cards, and they would quote them back and forth. And one guy would quote them, and then the other guy would quote the other one back. And I thought to myself, they're going to try to get me to do that. Not on your life. I don't know if it was by design or if God just sort of intervened on the situation, but as it turned out, there wasn't one of those people that came to me and said, why don't you memorize these scriptures? Nobody mentioned it to me. And after I'd hung around them for a few weeks, I don't remember how long it was. It couldn't have been very long, 3, 4, 5 weeks at most, I would guess. We went to a Thursday night stockade meeting. It's always a good place to have a good response. You get a lot of people out for the meeting, that is. And we would show these movies. And we'd show the movie. And, of course, I would just sort of sit around like this, you know, like, you know, I'm supposed to help out, but I didn't know what to do. They wouldn't even let me run the projector in those days. And after this movie, the guys would stick around. And Jack DeWitt led one of these fellows to Jesus Christ. And Jack was sitting there sharing this Beginning with Christ packet. We called it B-rations in those days, but it's the same thing. And this little verse packet. And I was sitting over there like this. And Jack looked up and he saw me looking so longingly. And he said, Russ, has anybody ever given you one of these? Mm-hmm. You want one? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I don't know. If I give it to you, will you really use it? Mm-hmm. And so Jack gave me that little packet. It took me 2 days to memorize those 5 verses. Scripture memorization changed my life. I used to review every verse that I memorized 4 times a day. All, you know, in the morning when we walked to work, the Army called it marching, I would review the verses that I memorized. I'd start off, and I'm marching. 1 John 5:11 and 12. And this is the record that God hath given. And I just keep cadence. You know, I couldn't say them out loud, but I'd say them in my mind. You had to do something with your mind on the way to work. And then we'd march on back. We'd march on back for lunch, and then back in the evening, and back at night. And I went over those verses until I had 70 or 80 verses. I quoted every one of them to myself 4 times a day, minimum. And those verses changed my life. Things started happening. My life started changing. As it turned out, from the outfit, that school outfit I was in, I was transferred to another outfit. And from there, I was sent all the way overseas to Germany. And you know, there was only one guy in the same outfit with me over in Germany that had been back there in that school outfit with me. You know who that was? Sure. Alfred Alfonso Zuger. God wanted Alfred Alfonso Zuger to see God, see him change a man's life. And he changed my life. And he'll never ask me any questions about that ever again, but he saw my life changed. He knew that I was no longer the same. Guys would come to me and ask me questions. I can remember one time I was standing in the shower. You don't take your New Testament with you in an army shower. And, you know, some guy, he shouts off, you know, where did Cain get his wife? And I thought, well, that's a stupid question. No, from his father-in-law. I didn't know where Cain, I didn't even know who Cain was. You know? I didn't even know what the question was, you know? But I looked at this guy and I said, well, you know, I'm not sure about that. But, you know, 1 John 5:11-12 says, and this is the record, that God hath given to us eternal life. And this life is in His Son. He that hath the Son hath life, and he that hath not the Son of God hath not life. 1 John 5:11-12. The guy sort of looked at me and he said, oh, and walked off. I hadn't been memorizing Scripture for about 6 months, and the chaplain came to me and he said, Russ, I would like you to lead Wednesday night prayer meeting and Bible study. I said, me? He said, yeah, you. I said, what about Tom? He's been to Bible school. He said, I don't want Tom, I want you. I said, me? He said, yeah, you. I said, why? He said, well, Russ, he said, I've noticed that one thing about your life, that whenever anybody asks you a question, all you ever do is quote a verse back to them. He didn't realize I didn't have an alternative. After I'd been in Germany 2 years, I was getting ready for discharge. The man in charge of the navigators working over there, Dan Pyatt, who is now working with an organization called Final Advance of Scripture Translation, FAST, now at Denton, Texas, spent many years working with the Billy Graham Association. Many of you probably have heard him or have sat underneath his counseling training classes under Billy Graham while he was with the Crusade. He was in charge of the navigator work in Europe in those days. And he came through Kaiserslautern and asked me to pray about taking my discharge and staying in Germany to work with them over there. And I could spend another hour telling you all of the things God did to bring to pass me getting a discharge in Germany in those days. One thing, just briefly, is I needed a certain paper. I needed an affidavit stating that I had sufficient funds to buy a plane ticket back to the States so that they could discharge me over there, and they knew that I would not be a stranded American that the government would have to bring back. And I had some funds in the bank, and so I just wrote a very casual letter to my folks and asked them to get a statement from the bank and to mail it back to me. And I mailed the letter off to them, and 6 days later I had the affidavit back in my hands in Germany. Normally, it took 6 to 8 days to go one way. I had it in my hand 6 days later. I went into the personnel office and I said, hey, I've got that paper. I think you can start processing things. And the personnel clerk said, you know, I've been checking things. And I didn't realize it until today, but today was the last day that we could submit the paperwork for you to get your discharge overseas. Well, I worked over there for 3 more years. I spent a total of 5 years in Germany. In 1961, I came back and I was working here at Glen Eyrie. And I wish I could tell you how God directed and during that time, because one of the most significant events of my life occurred during those 2 years. That is, I met my wife Donna. In 1963, we were married right here in Colorado Springs. And then I finally went to school, to college. And It was sort of embarrassing to me when I went to college. You know, I'd sit down next to another student, and we'd start chatting, and I'd say, "Well, you remember the war, don't you?" And the guy'd say, "No, I don't remember the Korean War." And I was talking about World War II, you know. And I wasn't old when it happened, but I remembered it. And it turned out, you know, that I went through there. I got my master's degree in mathematics at the University of Colorado. And from there, I spent a year teaching at Norfolk State College in Norfolk, Virginia, while doing some work with the NAVS. And then I moved from there, where I assumed the responsibility for the work among servicemen at Fort Bragg in Fayetteville, North Carolina. In 1970, I moved back to Virginia, Norfolk, where we live now, have been for the last 3 years, responsible for the Mid-Atlantic region, which is the two states of Virginia and North Carolina. Well, that sort of brings you up to date with me.